Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, which is Shabbos Daf Kuf Mem Beis. We are 9 lines from the top. Says the Gemara, Kalkola v'Evin B'Sechad. Mishnah taught us one may carry, when we move around, a basket, a kalkola, despite the fact that there is a Evin, a stone, inside this basket, even though the stone is useless, it's muktzah. Says the Gemara, V'amai, why is this mutter? Tihavi kalkola, let the basket become a basis ledover ha'asr. Although the basket itself is not muktzah, but it should become, it should attain the status of a basis, a support, a base for something which is muktzah, the stone. Thereby the basket itself should become muktzah, the muktzah of the stone should extend downward into the basket which is supporting the stone. Amar Rabba Bar Bachana, Amar Rav Yochanan, Hacha, you know what we're speaking about here? Bekalkola Malei Peiros Eskinan, with a basket that's filled with peiros, with produce, with fruit, which is not muktzah, and therefore the basket, since it's primarily serving as a support for the peiros within it, which are certainly higher in value than the stone, so that determines the status of this basket, and it is no longer considered a basis ledavar ha'asr. Rather, since it's supporting an asr and a mutter, and the mutter object is of higher value, that determines the status of the basket. Says the Gemara, but nevertheless, when he's moving this basket with the stone inside, he's actually transporting the stone as well. So it's not a direct interaction with that stone. It's an indirect moving. It's called tiltul min atzad. But this should only be mutter if there's no other viable option. V'lishdina l'peri, v'nishdila evan. Let him simply spill out the fruit, v'nishdila evan, and get rid of, toss away the stone in this manner. Why does he need to carry everything together? So of course he needs the peris, and he's carrying the muktz in an indirect fashion, simply for the sake of the dover hamutter, of the fruit. He doesn't need the stone. He's not moving it to use it. So it's an indirect use of muktzah, which is being done for the sake of the davar mutter, which is mutter, which is okay. But that's only if there's no other alternative. But here we have a good option. Let him simply spill everything out and then gather back the fruit and place it back in the empty basket. Why do we allow him to move the stone around? Again, v'lishdinu l'peri, let him throw out the fruit, v'lishdinu l'evan, throw out the stone, v'lishdinu continu b'yadayim, and let him gather together the fruit and place it back in the basket. Says Gemara, k'drabi Eloi Amarav. Just as Rabbi Eloi Amarav, so the name of Rav he interpreted, we're going to see later on the Gemara, that we are speaking there in a case of peiros hamitanfin. These are soft, mushy, ripe fruit, which are going to get dirty and repulsive if they are thrown down on the floor. Hachanami here as well, we're going to interpret the Mishnah. The discussion here regarding the basket is speaking about the peiros hamitanfin, these type of fruits which will get dirty and repulsive, and therefore there's no option. There's no viable alternative to actually keeping it in the basket and carrying it along with the stone. Says the Gemara, but there's still another option. Vilin arinu ne'uri. Let him go ahead and shake up the basket in a way where the fruit will move away from the stone, which will allow him to tip over the basket and get rid of the stone. We're speaking about a basket which has a hole either on the side or on the bottom. The Evan Gufa, the stone actually, the actual stone nasas doifin l'kalkola, it's being used as part of the wall of the basket. So it is needed here in order to keep the fruit in the basket. So therefore it's allowed. It's allowed to remain in place. Again, the purpose and intent of transporting this basket is for the sake of the fruit. So he needs the fruit elsewhere. He's transporting it for the sake of the davar mutter. But he wants to keep the stone in there, which is keeping everything in place. It's serving with the basket to maintain the fruit inside. So therefore, that is also considered to be a tiltal, an indirect tiltal of the stone, litzorech the davar hamutter, because it's simply aiding and benefiting the fruit, preventing them from falling out and dropping on the floor. Therefore, we allow him to transport this entire basket in its entirety. Let's take a look at Rashi inside. 13 lines from the top, beginning with the words, Tihavi kalkola basis. This was the first kasha of the Gemara. Why don't we treat the basket as a basis, as a support for the mukta, v'hi atzma te'asur. The basket itself should become asur to be moved. Malaya pears is full of fruit. The ikar nasis basis l'peres. Because primarily this basket has become a support for the fruit, which are higher in value. Hilkoch evin metalteles agav kli. That's why we allow him. The stone can be moved together with the kli u'peres agav kli peres on account of the kli and the peres shehu mutar or shehei mutarim, because they are considered to be objects which are mutar. So you can carry the stone along with him. V'nin continue b'yodayim. So this was the kasha of the Gemara. Let him pour everything out and then gather together the peres. Yilketem ala oretz. Gather them together from the floor b'yodav with his hands v'yachzir and kalkola and return them to the basket. V'yataltel them and then carry them in that manner. V'lomi yitir. Why did they allow Evan l'taltel agav kli peres? Why did they allow carrying the stone on account of the other items? The Gemara answered, "Peres hamitinaf and peres muvushal and v'rachin moed." Ripe and very soft, you're going to ain him figs, vetusim, berries, vanovim, grapes, shem yashlichim laretz, yitanfu, if you'll toss them on the floor, they will get dirty and repulsive. V'unarinu nu'uri, this was the next kasha, let him shake up the basket, achi stalku aperis min evin, until the peris separate from the stone, litzacha kakala, litzdadim, so into the sides of the basket, away from the stone, and then that will allow him to throw out the stone, v'yashlich evin levada, bini rasa, and then he'll go shake out the stone. The Gemara answered that this basket actually needs a stone, because it's p'chusa shenifchas g'doifna, oishuleo, either the side or the bottom got a hole, and the stone is actually plugging up the hole, so it's needed for the sake of the peris to keep them inside, keep them from falling out. Therefore, he can go and move it, the mukts indirectly, because the point and purpose is here for the davar hamutar to have his fruit. Let's get back to the Gemara. It says the Gemara, metaltelin truma. Mishnah says he can carry in the basket truma tmeya, which became tummy, which is unsuitable, together with the truma tahira. Omar avchizd, lo yishanu, this allowance was only said elisha tahira lamata. When the truma tahira is on the bottom, underneath the truma tmeya, utmeya lamala, and the tmeya is on top, so he has no direct access. He has no way of reaching the truma tahira. Aval tahira lamala, utmeya lamata. But if the truma tahira is on top, is the top layer, and the truma tmeya is on bottom, so there's no need for him to carry this entire basket and bring it to his table and spill it all out. There's no need to do that, because he can directly access his truma tahira, which is the top layer, shakile. The Torah, he simply removes the top layer of the Tumah Torah, which is not Muktzah, and he leaves the Tumah Torah intact. So there's no reason to allow him to move around this basket which contains the Muktzah. So the point again is that indirect carrying of Muktzah is only Mutter. If it is needed, if there's no alternative, there's no viable option, it's a Tzorech Davar Mutter, he needs the Mutter item, there's no other way to do it. Says the Gemara, V'chi Torah L'mata, Nami, even when the Torah is on bottom, there as well, nami lish dinu v'lem continu. In that case as well, when the tahira is lamata, why can't he just simply lish dinu v'lem continu? Why can't he just throw them out, like we asked before, let him spill everything out, and gather together the truma tahira and place it back in his basket? So v'chi tahira lamata nami, there as well, lish dinu v'lem continu. So this is where he said it. That we're speaking about these fruits, these soft fruits, which will get dirty, and it's not really a practical option. Says the Gemara, Meisvei, we have a kashmon abrais. The Brice says he can carry in one basket truma, which is tami and mukta, together with the truma tahira. V'yim achulin, together with chulin. Bein shetahira lamala, whether the tahira is on top, v'tmei lamata, and the tmei is on bottom. So whether we're speaking about such a case, or bain, or shetmei lamala, utor lamata, whether the tmeya is on top and the tahira is on bottom, that is mutter. So either way it's mutter, whether the tahira is on top or on bottom, it makes no difference, one can carry both together. This seems to be a kasha and refutation on Rav Chizda, who tells us that we are limited to a case where he has no direct access to his truma tahira. It's only mutter to be carried together with the tmeya when the truma tahira is on bottom. This brisa tells us otherwise. It makes no difference in what sequence they're lying. It is mutter. Amalach Rav Chizda. So Rav Chizda will respond, Mas nisin le tzorech gufay. There's a difference between the two situations. In our Mishnah, why is he transporting this basket? Because he needs the Truma Torah. So he's going to transfer it to his table, spill it all out, and take out the Truma Torah. So therefore, we are limited only to a case where he has no direct access to his Truma Torah otherwise. But in a case where the Torah is sitting on top, he has an easy option. He can simply just pick it off without moving the entire basket. Then there's no reason to allow it. However, the Braisa says, Letzorech Mekoymoi, is speaking about a case where he needs the space underneath the basket. In which case, it really makes no difference if the Torah is on top or on bottom. He doesn't need the fruit now. He needs to clear the area. Therefore, the Braisa doesn't differentiate between whether the Torah is on top or is on bottom. It's irrelevant because what he needs here is not the fruit, but the space underneath the basket. So we allow him to move the entire basket. Says the Gemara, my duchy de Rav Chisda. What was pressing Rav Chisda to establish and interpret our Mishnah to be speaking about a case where he needs the actual fruit? And therefore, Rav Chisda says, we're limited. This allowance can only apply to a case where he has no easy alternative. For instance, where the Truma Torah is way on bottom. But if it's on top, there's no heter. Why did he need to interpret the Mishnah to be speaking about a case where he needs the fruit? Why couldn't he simply say, well, the Mishnah is speaking about the same case as the Braisa. He needs a space underneath the basket, in which case we allow him to move the basket under all circumstances. So what prompted him to interpret the Mishnah this way? Omar Rava Masnisen Kavosei Daika. If you pay attention to the wording of the Mishnah, the wording indeed is indicative of Rav Chizda's interpretation. Diktani Sefer, because the next part of the Mishnah says, Moish Alakar, if there is money, which is Muksa, because it's inherently useless on Shabbos. So it's muktzah, and it's sitting on a car, on a pillow. And he needs to lie on a pillow. It's letzorech gufo. So what does he do with the money? The Mishnah will tell us, menayer sakar, he simply shakes off the pillow, v'hei noifleis, and the coins simply slip off. V'omar Rabba Barachana, Omar V'yechanon. So Rabba Barachana interpreted the name of V'yechanon, lo yishonu. This halacha, that we require him to shake it off, is only elul tzarech kufay. If he needs the actual pillow, so he'd like to lie down on the pillow, he needs to shake off the coins, he can do that. Aval tzarech mekaymai, but if what he needs here is not the pillow itself, he needs the makaym of the pillow. So he needs the space underneath it. In that case, metat leba idan olav. He can simply move away the pillow with the coins still perched on it. There's no need to shake it up because he needs a space. He needs the empty area. So he's allowed to do that. Letzorech mekaymai of the pillow. So apparently, we're discussing, the Mishnah, the Sefer of the Mishnah is discussing, when he needs the object itself. He needs the pillow itself. Therefore, we require him to shake it off. He can't pick it up with the coins. He can just shake it off. And that will enable him to use the pillow. With the Sefer Letzorech Kufay, apparently since the Sefer of the Mishnah is referring to a case where he needs the use of the actual object, Reisha Nami, the first part of the Mishnah as well, is speaking Letzorech Kufay when he needs the object itself, in the case of a basket which contains the Truma Torah and the Tmeya, what is he looking to use? He's looking to use the Peiros themselves. That's why Rav Chisda tells us, this halacha, this allowance of moving around this basket with the Muktzah inside is limited to a case. He has no viable option. He has the Truma sitting on bottom of the Truma Tmeya. So if the Torah is on bottom, he can't simply pick it off. But if the Torah is sitting on top, in which case he has a very easy alternative, just take off the top layer. In this case, we don't allow him to transfer the basket with the Muksa. So in summary, the Mishnah taught us that one may transfer a basket. And we're speaking about a case where he needs the fruit. So he's transferring the basket with the fruit that is, of course, not muktzah. So we learn about a kalkola v'evan b'secha, in which a stone is situated. We're speaking about fruit, which is mitanfin, which can't really be practically spilled out. They're going to get ruined. And as the Gemara told us, this stone is actually plugging a hole on the wall on the bottom of this basket and is needed to contain the fruit therein. Therefore, we allow him to move around this kalkola. And as the Gemara told us, the basket doesn't become a basis because the fruit is in there as well. So we allow him to move around this basket. Likewise, he can move around the basket which has Truma Tmeya and Truma Tahira we're speaking that he needs the actual fruit, the actual truma. Rav Chizkiya tells us, therefore, it is only mutter when the tmeo is on top and doesn't allow him access to the truma toyer. Therefore, he needs to transport it over to his table and spill it all out. But if the truma toyer is on top, in which case he can simply access it directly, he would not be allowed to transfer this entire basket. Continues the Gemara. Rav Yehuda Omer, af malin es hamaduma be'echod ameya. So maduma is a mixture of truma with non-truma. So we have, let's say, a sa'ah, a certain measure of truma, which fell into 50 sa'ah of chulin. Now, minat Torah, it would be batal, become nullified, because it's batal b'rayv. Mid rabbanon, they were more stringent when it comes to truma. We need to have 100 times non-truma than the truma. So in order for the truma to become mutter, it needs to be at a ratio of 1 to 100. One sa of truma falls into 100 of non-truma of chulin. In this case, it becomes mutter. But there's a halacha that needs to be mala as samaduma. He needs to remove, separate an amount of this mixture which equals the amount of the truma that fell into it. This is to spare the kohanim from financial loss. So therefore, he needs to go ahead and bring out, take out a portion of this maduma, even though it's really mutter. But he needs to go and do that. Rav Yehuda tells us he can do that even on Shabbos. Now, although it seems like he's fixing, he's repairing the fruit here, he's enabling it for use, there's no concern. There's no concern that perhaps if he does this, he's going to actually fix a kli on Shabbos. Explains the Gemara, why indeed? Why don't we regard this as misakin? Because he's taking something which is prohibited, something asur. This maduma cannot be used as is. And by separating this portion, he's enabling it. He's making it mutter. Why is this not called misake? Says the Gemara. Rabbi Doima afmalan v'chul. V'amai, why is he allowed to do this on Shabbos? How come misake? Isn't he fixing this food? Says the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda k'Rabbi Elazar sfili. Rabbi Yehuda follows the sheet of Rabbi Elazar. The Amar who said, Truma be'eino machta. The truma which is mixed into this chulin is regarded as though it's standing alone. It's a separate entity. Why? Since he can go ahead and take out the sa'ah that fell in, he can choose any one that he wants, and is considered as though he took back out the truma. So therefore, since we allow him to do that, apparently the perception here is that we regard it as though the truma is just a standalone item, as though it's standing on its own. And therefore, he can just remove it, and it's as though it's been taken out. So apparently, the perception here is that the truma is be'eino machta. The Chacham treated this mixture as though the truma hasn't really gotten itself completely embedded in the rest. It's somewhere there. You have to just simply choose it and pick it out. Therefore, the Gemara maintains that working with this svara, then removing this sa'ah from the mixture is not considered a proper tikkun. He's not really fixing up the rest of the mixture, because it was never really mixed in with the rest. He's not directly benefiting the rest of the mixture. He's simply pulling out what fell in, and the truma was considered as though it's standing alone. It's a separate entity. Therefore, taking it out is not really directly affecting the rest of the fruit, the rest of the mixture. Where do we find this concept? Says the Gemara, the Snan, as we learned in the Mishnah. Sa'a truma, shenafla, so we have a sa'a, a certain measure of truma, which fell into lepachos mimea. It fell into less than 100 sa'a of chulin, v'nidmu. Now this results in the entire mixture becoming meduma. So one may not eat it. We explained it to some drabbanon. Now, what happens if something follows this? V'nafal min ha-meduma. Now, a portion of this meduma, of this mixture, which is right now usher for consumption, a portion of this separates and falls into another amount of chulin. V'nafal min ha-meduma l'makom acher. Now, there are two ways to look at it. Should we say, well, the initial mixture was regarded as usher, drabbanon, it was forbidden. So should we say that the entire thing is regarded as total truma, and therefore anything that gets separated from it is treated like truma, and when that falls into another group of chulin, another volume of non-truma, how much is required to nullify this? 100 times as much. Because this portion that came from the initial mixture is regarded completely as truma. And we need 100 times that. Or should we say no? Fact is that the initial mixture only had a portion of truma. For instance, if there was a 1 sa'ah that got mixed into 49 sa'ah of chulin, so we have a total of 50. Now, in proportion, it's only a 50th. So if a sa'ah falls out of here, so we should calculate that only a proportion, only in proportion, only the compared to the ratio of the initial mixture, that much is sitting in this sa'ah. So it's really only a 50th of this sa'ah is regarded as truma. And it only has that much ability to continue prohibiting other mixtures. So if it falls in to another mixture, we simply calculate if there's enough chulin, enough non-truma, which equals 100 times more than the portion of truma found in this saw that fell in, which is really only a 50th. So you need 100 times that 50th, that would be enough to nullify it. So two ways to look at it. So again, sa'a truma shenafel l'pachos mimea, a sa'a truma that falls into less than 100, v'nidmu. This results in the whole thing becoming asur, meduma. Then, a part of that mixture, v'nafel mina meduma, a piece of that mixture, continues and separates and falls in l'makam achar to another group of chulin. Do we regard that portion as entirely truma, or do we say only in proportion? Reb Lezer, imam medamaska trumas vaday. Reb Lezer says that this portion that's separated from the initial mixture is regarded and treated like definite truma. Why? Because according to Reb Lezer, the truma that we're meant to take out from the mixture, as we mentioned earlier, one must separate from the mixture, even when there is 100 times the amount of truma, you must separate and take out according to the amount of truma that fell in. Likewise, in this case, when and we say that the sa'ah never really got mixed in with the rest. That was the explanation we gave earlier to Rabbi Yehuda's shita. He's simply taking out something which was standing alone as is. Never really got embedded in the rest. Likewise, in this case, where a sa'ah truma fell into less than 100, and the entire thing becomes asr. Rabbi Lezer says the portion that comes out is regarded as though it's the truma itself. So it's a chumra here. We regard it as though it's the truma itself. And we don't say, well, it's been mixed in completely with the rest. And the portion that gets separated is only partially truma in proportion and in ratio to how much truma there was in this mixture. No. We say that since we know that one can go ahead and even when it's mutter, right, when it's 100 times the truma, he can go ahead and take one out and give it to the kohen. We consider that to be the truma, because we treat it as though the truma never got really mixed in with the rest. See here as well, when it makes the chulin asr, we say, well, whatever comes out is regarded as though it's the truma itself. The truma is like its own entity. It's standing alone. If something comes out, we look at it like the truma, like entirely truma. So if Reb Lezer says, when that gets mixed into more chulin, that is regarded as vaday truma, and we need 100 times that entire portion. The chachamim, I mean, no, only in proportion, only according to the percentage of how much truma fell into the initial mixture. Eina meduma, something which is meduma, medamei cannot pass on, cannot make something else meduma when it falls into it. Elo fi cheshbon, only according to the percentage. We need to calculate what percentage of truma was found in the initial mixture. And as a result of that, we say, well, we need in the second mixture 100 times as much as the percentage of truma which was in this portion that's separated from that initial mixture. So we see this concept according to Reb Lezer. Again, since one can go ahead and remove a sa'ah of truma from 101, and we say, well, that sa'ah is given to the kohen, we treat it as though this was the initial sa'ah truma that fell in. We treat the sa'ah truma as though it's standing alone. Never really got mixed in with the rest. So likewise, when it comes to making asr, So if you have a sof truma that fell into less than 100, and the whole thing is meduma, and a piece of that mixture got separated and falls into mochulim, we treat that separation, that part that separated, as though it's entirely truma. This is the truma that fell into the initial mixture. So likewise, in our case, says Rabbi Yehuda, one can go ahead and pick up and separate the truma, give it to the kohen, even on Shabbos, in a case where one saw falls into 100, and it's technically mutter, but he needs to remove something, give it to the kohen. He can remove it, give it to the kohen. We treat the truma as though it never really got mixed into the rest, and he's not really directly being misaken the rest of the group, the rest of the mixture. So Rabbi Yehuda is based on Rav Lezer's shita. Says the Gemara, Eimer de Shamas le'lechumra. When do we hear Rabbi Lezer? That's only the chumra. He says, well, we must be stringent. We must treat the portion that's separated from the initial mixture as though it's entirely meduma. It's not only a part of it, a percentage of it. We treat it entirely as truma. And therefore, when it falls into mochulin, we need 100 times that amount. That's only the chumra. Lekula mishamisli. Do we hear that Rav Lezer would apply this concept even when it results in a leniency like in our Mishnah? Because although we work with this concept that whatever gets removed from this mixture is regarded completely as truma, but at the end of the day, ultimately he is fixing the rest. So when a saw truma falls into 100, and he needs to remove one of the saw to give it to the kohen, that's technically enabling the entire mixture to be consumed and be eaten. So at the end of the day, this is resulting in enabling this mixture for consumption. So he's being masak in the rest. How do you know that Rav Lezer would hold that you apply the svara when it results in a kula, and he would not consider this to be a masaka? Says the Gemara, Ella, rather, Huda Amar Rav Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda's allowance is based on Rav Shimon. He concurs with the shita of Rav Shimon Kedisnan, as we find in a mission that Rav Shimon will apply this concept even if it results in a kula. Sa'ah Truma Shanafla Lameya. If a sa'ah of Truma falls into 100 of chulin, and we know that nullifies the sa'ah, the entire mixture is mutter, provided that he goes ahead and lifts a saw out of that, gives it to the kain. For lo yispik lagbia, now he didn't get a chance to lift it. Ad shenafla cheres. By the time he decided to separate that saw, what happened? Another saw of truma falls into this mixture. So now we have a resulting mixture of two saw of truma with 100 of chulin. Now that 100 of chulin is not sufficient to be a vata to nullify two saw of chulin. Now two ways to look at it. Should we say, well, one at a time. The first saw fell in, 200, became batal. Now that another saw fell, too bad. It's falling into 101, which is mutter. Because the initial mixture was mutter. So each saw is treated separately. Or do we say no? At the end of the day, how much truma is in this mixture? Two saw. 100 of chulin doesn't have the ability to nullify two saw, to mevatal two saw. So Tanakhama says it's asur. Harezu asur. Rav Shimon matter. He says it's mutter. Why? Apparently, Rav Shimon holds that since the initial saw truma that fell into the 100 and became batal, but he needs to go out and remove that saw and give it to the kohen, we view that saw as though it's separate. It's standing alone. It's not part of that mixture. And therefore, when the second saw falls in, he's not being mitzarif with the first saw. He's not combining. They're not joining forces. Because the first saw of truma is not really inherently diluted and mixed in with the rest. It's standing alone. So the second saw will become batal in the 100 of chulin. Don't view it as though there are two saw of truma here. Rather, it's only one saw. So we see that according to Reb Shimon, the truma mixed in is considered to be a separate entity. And therefore, we don't reckon with that first saw because it's out of the equation. It's standing alone. And when the second saw falls in, he's falling into 100 chulin, which is enough to be mevatalim. So this is an application of this principle, even lekula. So apparently Rabbi Yehuda will base his shita on Rav Shimon. Therefore, he could go remove this saw on Shabbos because it's standing alone. It's independently standing. It's not really considered to be mixed into the rest. And therefore, it's not a tikkun on the rest of the mixture. Says Umimai, how do you know to interpret the machlokes in this manner? Dilma, perhaps hasam, in the case of the saw that fell in, and then another saw falls in, perhaps over there, all agree, no, the truma is not standing alone, it's properly mixed in with the rest. Nobody concurs with this svara, with this principle of Rabbi Yehuda. Perhaps over there, the machlokes is based on a different discussion. The point of the machlokes is as follows. The Tanakhama suffer. Even though they fell one after the other, so it wasn't together simultaneously, one saw fell in, and then 5 minutes later another saw fell in, we regard it as though it fell together. It's as though they fell together, meaning, ultimately speaking, there is two saw in this mixture. So, despite the fact that it happened incrementally, that's irrelevant. There are two saw truma in 100 chulin, which makes the mixture asr, because it's not enough chulin to be mevata the truma. So it's kemad nafal bevas achas dam v'hola cham shenafla, and we consider the first saw as though it's mixed in with 50. V'hola cham shenafla, and the second one is mixed in with 50. Meaning, since this 100 chulin contains two saw of chulin, it's as though each saw is matching up with 50. This one has 50. This one's mixed in with 50. Meaning 50 doesn't have the ability to nullify a saw of truma. It's only 50 times as much. So since it's 100 chulin versus two of truma, it's not enough to be mevatel it. Reb Shimon Savar, he holds kamaisa batel b'meya. The first one, when it fell in, what happened? It became nullified. It became batel to the 100 chulin that were opposing it. So it's finished. It's fait accompli. It's done. It's past. It's bygone. Now when the second one falls in, v'ha to batel b'meya v'chad. Now the second saw that falls in, he's confronted with 101 of permissible material there. And therefore, he's batel. We don't say, well, at the end of the day, there were two saw of chulin in this thing. The first one fell in, it became batel. We don't reckon with it. It's as though it's not truma. And the second falls in, now he's mixing in to 101 of heter. And therefore, he's batel. So it's unrelated to our discussion whether it's separate or mixed in. It's an entirely different context. Ella, rather, we're looking for a source where Yehuda allows doing the halal of the truman Shabbos. Ella, who the amakar b'shim malazar. Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to the svara, the shita of Rishim Elazar, the sanya of Rishim Elazar. When we have meduma, we have a saw of truma that falls into 100 of chulin. So technically it's batel, but he's required to separate a saw and give it to the kayin. Rishim Elazar says he doesn't really need to physically remove it. Nice and ain't of bitzadzeh, he can simply place his eyes on one side of this basket and designate the sa'af truma to that corner. Meaning, in his mind, he's saying, okay, there's sa'af truma that I need to separate. I'm not holding by doing that right this moment, but it's right there in the corner. Va'ochel mitzad acha, that enables him to eat from the other side. So he does need to actually lift and separate that sa'af. And since this process is sufficient to enable eating the rest of the mixture, Rabbi Yehuda maintains, since a mice is not involved, it's not considered to be a tikkun, and therefore, it doesn't resemble fixing a kli on Shabbos. It's merely, in his mind, it's an intellectual act, and therefore, it's not considered to be a mice tikkun, it's mutter on Shabbos. Says the Gemara, umi sovar lekavasei. So there's Rabbi Yehuda. One second. So Rabbi Yehuda holds like a shomer lazer, and since technically he can resolve this situation by merely applying his intellectual powers, so Rabbi Yehuda maintains even if he physically does separate it, it's not considered to be a tikkun because it's not really needed. It's unnecessary. So even if he actually physically does that, he removes the truma, it's not considered to be a tikkun because it can be done through machshava as well. Continues the Gemara. Umi sovar lekavasei? Can we say that Rav Shimon Elazar agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that he can go ahead and simply do this on Shabbos because it's not considered to be a tikkun? We find that Rav Shimon Elazar himself actually disagrees with Rav Yehuda. He does not allow to do this on Shabbos. The Sanya Rida Omer, Malin is Hamaduma Be'echad Meya. Rida holds when there's 101, he can go be Mal, he can physically lift the Sa'at Truma, as we said earlier, since theoretically he can do it through Machshava. So even if he chooses to do it through Masa, it's okay. It's not considered to be a proper masa tikkun. So this is Shita Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, he holds, no, on Shabbos, he can't physically separate the truma. If he chooses, he can place his eyes, he can focus on one corner and designate that the truma should be lying in that corner. And then that enables him to eat from the other side. Meaning that we find that Rav Shimon Elazar himself does not concur with Rav Yehuda's heter. He says to actually physically remove that truma would be considered a tikkun, that's asur on Shabbos. He can only use intellectual powers to do this, which is not a maisa. So how can you say that Rav Yehuda is following Shimon Elazar? Shimon Elazar allows to do it through intellectual powers, and therefore, if Rav Yehuda says he can actually do it physically, if Shimon Elazar himself does not allow it to be done physically, says what you're right. The Rav Yehuda adifa, but the Rav Shimon Elazar. Rav Yehuda himself is actually more makel, is more lenient than Shimon Elazar. He uses Shimon Elazar's opinion to base his leniency upon. He says like this, according to Shimon Elazar, since technically speaking, one can simply use his machshava, use his eyes, to affect heter on this mixture. So since theoretically that is sufficient, apparently not much real tikkun is taking place. It's not really, doesn't really necessarily involve a maisa tikkun. So based on that, Rav Yehuda says, if he chooses to actually physically separate the truma, that's okay. Because this whole process doesn't really have the status, the din of a maisa tikkun, therefore it could be done on Shabbos. So in summary, being male samaduma, if we have a mixture of truma with a hundred of chulin, in which case the truma is really batal, it's mutter, but he needs to remove a sa'ah, a portion of truma, and give it to the kohen. According to Tanakama, he can't do this on Shabbos. It's considered to be a tikkun. According to Shimon Elazar, he can do it provided he's not physically separating, he's merely using his eyes. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he can even physically separate the truma. Continues the Mishnah. Ha'even shabia chavis. If there's a stone lying on a barrel on Shabbos, this barrel has some wine in it and needs to reach his wine. So what does he do? Mato al tzida. He simply tips the barrel over to its on its side, being a phallus, and this results in the stone slipping off. But he can't actually directly touch the stone. Hoysa ben achavis. What if the barrel was amongst other barrels, which doesn't allow him to tip the stone over lest the stone go and break the other barrels? So we give him another option. Magbia, he lifts the barrel. Umat al tzida. So he lifts it, takes it out of that location, tilts it on its side, vine felas, and the stone falls off. So you see that one can carry muktza, because he's doing it indirectly. And it's being done, litzarech davar mut, for the sake of the permissible item, to use the wine. So preferably, he should simply tip it over, which is called ni'ur. He's simply shaking it over. He's tipping it over. It's not a direct contact with the muktza. But if that's not a viable choice, then he goes ahead and lifts it, takes it out of the air, and then tips it over. Continues the Mishnah. Moish al akar, if there's money sitting on his pillow, menaris akar, he shakes the pillow, ve'inoifles, and the money slips off. Concludes the Mishnah. Hoysel of lishleshes. What if there was some repulsive dirt on his pillow, a fabric pillow? Mekancha besmartet. He needs to wipe it off with a dry cloth. He can soak it with water. Rashi explains this would be considered a malacha. It's washing. It's mechabes. It's malabin. What about if it was a leather pillow? Hoysa shel oyer, made of soft leather. Nois nalel mayim ashetichla. Then he's allowed to pour water on it until it cleans up, it washes away the dirt. Rashi points out he can't actually launder it and scrub it because when he does that to soft leather, that as well is considered to be a malacha. Omar Abhun Amarav. The Mishnah told us he can handle this barrel, tip it, lift it, whatever he needs to do to free himself of this rock. Lo yishanu. This allowance was only said to Elosh B'Shecheach. If he forgot, he inadvertently left the stone on the chavis. But if he purposely left it there, he intended on the stone being present on his barrel on Shabbos. In this case, he can't actually move the barrel at all. Nasa basis of davar aser. The barrel becomes a basis, a support, a basis for the stone, which is a davar aser. Now, although the barrel contains wine in it, so why don't we say the barrel is considered a basis to the item of higher value? The wine, like we had earlier by the pears, so the bir halacha, the Chavetz Chaim says, because the top of the barrel, the mouth of the barrel, doesn't have any wine. And that portion of the barrel is simply supporting, strictly supporting the stone. In which case it becomes a basis if it was placed there with the intention of remaining there on Shabbos. Continues the Gemara, Hoysa ben Chavies. So the Mishnah told us in the second halacha, if tipping the barrel over is not a viable option, if it was in between other, amongst other barrels, So he lifts the barrel, takes it out of the area, and then tips it over. Now, why can't he simply push the rock off? So in the first case of the Mishnah, he's not really handling the rock. He's simply tipping the barrel sideways. It's a very indirect way of handling the muktzah. So that's certainly the most preferred manner. But in this case, where he's actually lifting the barrel because he has no other choice, he has to get it out of the area. So he's lifting the barrel with the muktzah. It's an indirect carrying of the muktzah, but it is somewhat handling it in a more direct manner. So why do we insist on doing it that manner rather than simply removing the rock straight away? Because it's getting in the way of his food. It's getting in the way of his wine. He should be able to do that. Simply push away the rock, which is obstructing his access to his wine. So he's being metal to the muktzah, but he's simply trying to get it out of the way. He's brushing it off. In order to access the wine therein. So why does the Mishnah insist on him lifting the barrel with the stone on top of it and not actually directly handling the stone? Says the Gemara, Man Tana, who is this Tana? Whose opinion is this? The Cholecha, the Iki, Sura, Ve'atera. Whenever we have a choice of handling the Isser, meaning the rock, Ve'atera, or another choice would be directly interacting with the Chavis, which is Heter. And there's no apparent benefit or gain in doing the directly handling the Isser. There's no reason to prefer allowing him to directly push off the stone rather than handling the barrel. So when we're faced with an equal choice of handling the Isser or handling the Heter, Be'atera Tarchinan, we must go ahead and be matriach, exert ourselves, meaning get involved, handle, interact with the Heter. Such as in this case, where we insist on him lifting the barrel and removing the stone in this manner rather than actually pushing off the stone directly. Be'atera Tarchinan, be'isur le'tarchinan. We don't do tircha, we don't interact with the forbidden object, in this case, the stone. So whose shita is this that insists on a person interacting with the dvar heter when there's no real apparent benefit to doing otherwise? Amar Rabba bar Achana Rav Yochanan, Rav Shimon Gamliel. This is the shita of Rav Shimon Gamliel, the snan, as we learned. Ha-boyer kitnis b'yantav. One does boyer, he sorts out his beans from the inedible portion, from the pebbles, etc. So he does this on yantav. How should he do it? He must remove the edible portion. He can't remove the psoilus, the inedibles. He does it in a way where he's removing the edibles from the inedibles. And he eats. He can do boirer in a usual manner, in a typical manner, meaning removing the psoilus, the inedible portion from the oichel. That's okay. Provided that he does it in his bosom. For instance, he's doing it in a towel sitting on his lap, or in a large bowl. They can't use a sift or a sieve. The person explains it appears as though he's preparing it for at the Yom Tov. So he must do it in this derech shinui. V'tanya, and we learned in the Brayse, Omar b'shim gamliel, v'amer devam amrur. When do we still say that he can go ahead and actually remove the inedible, the psalus, which is really muktzah? He can directly interact with the muktzah. That's only kishah oichel merubel apsolus. We have a mixture of oichel apsolus, beans with the pebbles, the edibles with inedibles, and there's more, there's a larger amount of the oichel than the psolus therein, in which case it's actually easier, it's more convenient to separate what from what, to separate the psolus, which is a lower quantity, from the oichel, rather than having to remove the oichel, which is a much greater amount. But in a case where there's no real benefit to removing the psoilus because the psoilus is actually more in quantity than the oichel, there are more pebbles than beans. So in this case, there's no gain to allowing him removing the psoilus directly. All will agree, even Basil will agree, that the way to do it is he needs to go separate by interacting with the food because there's no gain here. Since there's no less tircha when he goes in and removes the psoilus because the psoilus is actually in a greater quantity than the oichel. So in this case, we insist on him interacting with the permissible item, with the food. Likewise, in our case of the Mishnah, we have a choice. We're faced with a choice of either removing the stone directly, interacting directly with the stone, to get to his wine, or insisting on him interacting with the barrel, lifting the barrel, taking out of the area, lift and tilting the stone off. We insist on him doing it in this manner. Why? Because there's no apparent gain to directly pushing off the stone. Therefore, we insist on him interacting specifically with the permissible item, which is the chavis. Says him, 1 second. Why is it an equal choice? Isn't it much easier just to simply toss off the stone? But in our case, the chi oichem ruba l'apsel is dummy. It is equated to the case where he has a mixture of oichel and psoilis, where the oichel is in a greater quantity than psoilis. In which case, Rav Shimon Gamliel clearly tells us that one may interact with the psoilis, which is a smaller quantity, since it's easier, there's less tircha, less exertion involved. Likewise, in our case, it's much easier for him to simply slip the stone off than to lift the entire chavis and maneuver it out. Says the Gemara, no, och, and I'm here as well. Kivan di boi l'mishko. Since when he wants to get his wine out, he wanted to reach the bottom of the barrel to get the wine out of the shakale until he lifts the entire barrel. So the wine on top, on the surface, okay, he can get out without lifting the barrel. But in order to get to the bottom of the barrel, he needs to lift the entire barrel out. He's going to have to do that in any rate, in any case. So since he has to do that, regardless, so you don't allow him to push the stone off. Will you insist on him removing the stone via handling of the barrel itself? This is equated to the case where there's more psoilis, more inedibles than the edibles. In which case, we said earlier, there's no gain, there's no sparing exertion, there's no less tircha by allowing it to directly remove the psoilis, because there's more psoilis than eichel. It's actually easier, it's more convenient to remove the eichel. Therefore, we insist on him interacting with the eichel, which is a dvar heter. Likewise, in our case, since at any rate he needs to lift that barrel, so we insist on him removing the rock strictly via handling of the barrel. Continues the Gemara. Hoisa ben chavios. So if the barrel was amongst others magbia, he lifts it and carries it out and tilts it. Tanya, Rabbi Yosi Omer, hoisa chavos munachas ba'itzer. If it was sitting in a storeroom amongst other barrels, oisha hayu klei zchuchas munachas tachteh, or there were glass items underneath it, in which case it's not really practical to drop the stone at it in its place. So he lifts the barrel to a different location, or matal tzida, tilts it on its side, v'nefeles, and the stone falls off. He removes from the barrel what he needs, and returns it to its place. His coins sitting on his pillow, Mishnah tells us he can shake them off. This is only said when the coins were left inadvertently. But if he placed it purposely so it remains there on Shabbos, not a basis of the bar aser, then the entire pillow is a basis. It's forming a support for the coins, in which case the entire pillow is off limits as well. This insistence on shaking off the coins is only el tzerich gufei. If he needs the pillow itself, he needs to lay down on the pillow. So he shakes off the coins and he lies down. But if he needs the space underneath the pillow, then he doesn't need to shake off the coins. He can move around the pillow with the coins on it to clear the area. Likewise, we learn from Chia Barav Midifti, this is only if he needs the pillow itself and needs to shake it off. But if he needs the space underneath the pillow, then he can go ahead, he can move the pillow when the coins are still on it, because he needs the space underneath the pillow. So in summary, we learned that if one forgets a stone on a barrel, he tips over the barrel, lets the stone fall off. If it's between other barrels, he picks it up, takes it out of the area, and then tilts it. And the Gemara tells us this is in accordance with Shimon Gamliel, who insists on a person handling, interacting with the non-mukta item. If he needs the space underneath, the Gemara told us he can actually lift the entire pillow and take it to a different location. Continues the Gemara, Moishal Akar Minar. Amar Beisha, Shochach Arniki Bechatzar. If one left behind his Arniki, his wallet, in a courtyard, and is concerned about loss of his property, Maniach Alea Kikar, he can place a bread, Oitinek, or a small or infant, on the wallet or Matatala, and carry the wallet in this manner. The Mepharshim explained that we regard the wallet as though it's bottle, it's subordinate, it's serving the kikar or tinak above it. Omer b'Yitzchak, shachach levena b'chatzar. Likewise, if he forgets a brick out in the courtyard, maniach aleha, kikar or tinak, he can place elo for bread or an infant, umetalslam carried. Amar Rav Yehuda bar Shila amar Vasi. Pamachas. There was once a time, shachachu diskia milei mois. They forgot a pouch full of money, v'srati out in the street. Ubo v'sholu, as Rabbi Yechon, they asked him, Rabbi Yechon, what should we do? Amar, he said, lohen, to them, hinicho alea kikor etinek, v'tiltalua. Go ahead and place a kikor etinek on it, and you can go ahead and carry it. Amar, marzucha hilchasa, kichol hanishmaitza. We follow the halacha, indeed, follows all these sayings, b'sholicheach, strictly, when he left his property behind. So Chachamim provided this allowance to place the kikor etinek on account of a concern of hefsed mammon, losing property. Therefore, there's a specific heter which doesn't really apply to other circumstances. So he left his wallet out in an unprotected area, for instance. He can go ahead and use this method. Rav Ashi Amar, afilu shochach nami loy. Even if he forgets his property out there, there's no allowance. V'loy omru kikor etinek. The Chacham only applied this method of kikar etinek ela lemeis v'lvad, only specifically when there's somebody that passed away, he's sitting in the sun, on account of human dignity, one may place a kikar etinek on him to get him out of that area, to preserve his honor and dignity. Continues the Gemara, Abaye monach kapa, Abaye placed a spoon, a kipi, on bundles of grain, to enable them to be moved. Rabba monach sakina, he placed a knife, a baryoina, on a raw bird, and he carried it. Amrav Yosef, kama harifa shmaitza de dartki. How sharp are these sayings, are these teachings of these youngsters? Meaning they think that they're correct, that it's so sharp, but it's really incorrect. Emer de amar rabbanon. When did the rabbanon tell us that we can apply this method of the kikur etinuk? That's only b'shecheyach. If one forgets, like we said earlier, he leaves his property out in the open, so they allowed him to apply this method. L'chatchila mi'amar, but to initiate this, to place something on a muktzah item, to move it, there's no allowance for that. Amar Abai, so Abai responded, I didn't really do anything wrong. Ilav de adam choshev anav, not the fact that I'm a distinguished person, and I need to be concerned about public perception. I need to be extra careful lest the public apply leniencies to other situations as well. I need to be extra careful with my actions. If not for that, meaning that's what prompted me to place the spoon on the bundles, simply out of public perception concern. If not for that, kapa akipi lamli, why would I need to place a spoon on the bundles? Hachazel mizga alayu. These bundles are suitable to be sat upon. They're not even muktzah. So technically speaking, I never really had any concern of muktzah whatsoever. Amar Rava, likewise, ano ilav da'ol choshev ano. Not for the fact that I am a distinguished person and concerned about the same public perception issue. Sakina bar yoyna lomli. Why would I have ever had to place the knife on that bird? Hachazel lomtzah. This bird is perfectly suitable to be eaten raw. One can eat a raw bird, so it's not considered to be muktzah at all. Therefore, there was no concern about what I did. So in summary, regarding using a kikar or a tinaik placed on a muktzah item, when it comes to preserving the dignity and honor of a mace, all agree that it's mutter. Regarding employing this method to salvage one's property, he forgot his wallet out in the open. According to Mazutra, it's mutter. According to Rav Ashi, it would be asr. Okay, time for a brief review of today's daf. We began with the concept of moving around muktzah indirectly if it is for the sake of a davar mutter. For instance, he has a basket with fruit in there, and there's a stone there as well, which is muktzah. The Gemara concluded he can move around that basket because there's no other viable option. He can't spill out the fruit, which are going to get ruined, and that stone is actually embedded in the wall and is needed for the containment of the fruit. Likewise, if he has a basket which contains Truma Tahira with Truma Tmeya, and as Rav Chisda pointed out, the Truma Tmeya is situated on top. So he has no other option. Rather than transporting this entire basket with all its content, he may do so. Regarding the halacha of Malin and Samaduma Be'echadumeya, if there's a Sa'ah of Truma that falls into 100 of Chulin, in which technically it becomes Batal Minatar, but when the Rabbanon needs to go ahead and separate one Sa'ah and give it to the Kohen, according to Tanakam, he can't do this on Shabbos because he's fixing, he's enabling the rest of the mixture for consumption, according to Shimon Lazar. If he mentally does this, then he can do it because it's not a Ma'aseh Tikkun. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we go a step further. Since technically, mental application is sufficient. So he says, well, if I choose to do it manually, actually lifting, separating that truma, that's not called a tikkun, since it's not really necessary to do it physically. Regarding a stone sitting on a chavis, the Gemara tells us, he forgot, he left it inadvertently. So you can go ahead and tip the chavis and let the stone fall out. If it's between other barrels, he can actually lift it, take it out of the area, and then tip it. The same thing regarding coins on a pillow. Now, if he needs the makim of the pillow or the makim of the chavis, he can actually lift the entire thing with the coin on it because he needs the space underneath the pillow. Regarding employing the method of a kikar or tinaik placed on a muksa item, when it's regarding a mace, all agree, he can transport the mace in this manner. Regarding, for instance, a wallet, which one forgot in an insecure area, according to Mazutra, it's mutter, according to Ravashi, it would be asr.